Well, today we're fortunate to have pretty reliable and accurate weather forecasting, but even with that, it can be a challenge to plan correctly for travel. And then there are folks who just ignore the warnings anyway. Well, you can imagine the challenges that ship captains on the Great Lakes faced 100 years ago. In November of 1913, there was a storm to end all storms that they had to contend with. I don't know that we've had one like it since. I don't think so. It was the November 1913 storm. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're going to be visiting with author Michael Schumacher. He's written 12 books, including Mighty Fitz, The Sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald, and Wreck of the Carl D. He's also responsible for 25 documentaries on Great Lakes shipwrecks and lighthouses. His most recent book is November's Fury, The Deadly Great Lakes Hurricanes of 1913. And with that bad weather, guess what? He's on his way to the station, and I expect him to be there very shortly. He'll be broadcasting. We'll be visiting with him from our Milwaukee studios. And I expect him to be with us very shortly. So, while we're waiting for him to arrive, I thought we'd just take a few minutes to have an open line. And we look forward to hearing what you would like to hear during this 11 to 12:30 time slot. Excuse me. And then we'll, once he arrives, we will start our interview with him, Michael Schumacher. I just to mention, later, by the way, join in with your questions or with your suggestions for programs. That number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. We'd love to hear from you. If you've got some ideas about some shows that you would like to hear, we would love to hear from you. We'll also be visiting with our weather guy, Steve Ackerman, at 11:45, and he'll share what the National Weather Service seasonal outlook says. He's going to help us understand those devastating tornadoes earlier this month. So we'll look forward to that as well. But I'm really looking forward to talking with Michael Schumacher, because it's hard to imagine, really, the size of the hurricane. You know, we don't think about a hurricane in the Midwest and across the Great Lakes. I'm really looking forward to that. And again, program ideas, give us a call with your program suggestions at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You know, we have a three-story house where we live, my wife and I and daughter. And that three-story house is about 38 feet tall. And this morning when I got up and looked out, I got up and went outside. It was snowing out. But I looked at the house and tried to imagine waves on the Great Lakes that were taller than my house, my three-story house. That's what ship captains had to contend with on that November. Actually, it was not one day. It was the November 7th through the 10th. That's what they had to contend with back in that time in 1913, 100 years ago. So I'm telling you, it's the book is fascinating, so I'm really looking forward to talking with him. In the meantime, let me hear from you. Give us some ideas about programs that you'd like to hear. And Larry and DePeer, let's turn to you. Thanks for calling, Larry.
Hi, how are you, Larry?
Great, appreciate your call. What have you got in mind?
Well, in the 1900s, there was another bad storm in November called the Armistice Day Storm.
Yes.
And I thought that might be a good program.
You know, and we have done some shows on that, but it's been quite a long time. I can't even remember. I'm trying to remember when the last time was. And there are some people out there who know a lot about it and some people who have written about it. And I think it'd be fun to do that again as well. So I appreciate that one. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate it. What about you? Have you got an idea for a program? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. We would certainly love to hear from you. 1-800-642-1234. Thinking ahead to what we've got some good shows coming up the rest of this week. There'll be we've got our annual Thanksgiving Day show that it's going to be a little bit sad probably this year because Noel Cutright will not be with us. Obviously, Noel passed on just a few weeks ago of cancer, but we're going to go ahead with the show, and Judith's actually going to be hosting the show that day. So, and there'll be some. Actually, some remembrances of Noel, and we're going to play some pieces from a previous show that he appeared on, and was actually received an award from the Department of Natural Resources. So, we're kind of looking forward to that Thanksgiving show, although it's with kind of mixed emotions. I'm here to tell you. So that's one of the shows that's coming up. This week, so we're looking forward to that. Other shows I'm thinking about coming up, we have some shows coming up with, tomorrow we'll be talking with a couple of authors about books, so we're looking forward to that. I always enjoy talking with authors, and tomorrow one of them is Norman Gilliland, so I'm really looking forward to visiting with him about his latest book, which is a good one, tell you that. Judy in Lodi, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. What I was thinking, you should have some more shows on cooking, you know, for recipes and stuff. Because there's one lady that wants that recipe for the butter chews that I gave Judith. I mailed it to her.
Ah, yeah, you know, I always love talking about food.
especially when it has to do with butter, because I know you like butter.
I like butter. We use butter at home. We have butter. I had buttered some toast this morning for my daughter. We made an egg sandwich for her. And
yeah, but butter chews are better than that.
All right, Judy. That I can promise you we will do.
Okay, that's good. Thanks, Larry.
Yep, thanks a lot. Happy Thanksgiving. Bill in La Crosse. We turn to you next. Hi, Bill.
I have a suggestion for you.
Yep.
And it ties in a little bit to the one you're going to do this morning. And I just came from the La Crosse Public Library where they had a presentation on the Christmas tree ship.
Oh, yeah.
It was a Wisconsin ship, and it's a Wisconsin captain. And it's an extremely interesting story where it went down 1912. In Lake Michigan,
yep,
off of the coast of Wisconsin,
yep,
and was carrying Christmas trees to Chicago, and it did this every year for years and years, but it lost the whole crew when it went down. But there's more to this, a lot more to the story. I would take up an hour to tell you.
yeah, it is a fact, and I've read about it. It's a fascinating. It's come up a bit for discussion on the show, but it's. It's fascinating, and just the sort of sadness of Christmas trees washing up on the shore for a long
exactly.
time afterwards. Yeah, that's a good idea, Bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Doug in Wisconsin Rapids, your turn. Hi, Doug.
Hello. How are you?
Wonderful. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I enjoy your program very much. My suggestion for you is, it may have been on before, but it's always interested me about the Great Peshtigo Fire of October of 1871, about the weather conditions, et cetera. I just think that would be a great item for your news, for your programming.
You know, I have been fascinated by that story as well, and the sort of the personal stories of those who survived and the sad parts of, you know, the families and so forth that just didn't make it. Makes for a real compelling.
It certainly was a big part of Wisconsin's history of that time, the tremendous loss of life and the loss of property.
Oh, yeah. And the same day as the Chicago fire.
Yeah, and so much more, and most people know about the Chicago fire, but they don't know about the Peshtigo fire.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Thank you, Doug. Appreciate it.
Have a good day.
Appreciate that very much. You know, somebody was reminding me that one of our favorite shows of the year, I think it might be the favorite show that I do every year, is on Christmas Eve. And if you have not heard the Christmas Eve show with Santa Claus and Elf, usually Elf Dory comes along, you are missing out. Only children get to call on Christmas Eve and tell Santa Claus about the gifts that they would like for Christmas. And it is really, for me, it's about the most fun show that I do all year long. And to hear the youngsters, the little voices, talking to Santa Claus with great wonder in their voice is really something to hear and something to behold. And here I've got the Santa Claus and the Elf right in the studio with me. So what could be better than that? That's on Christmas Eve. We do it every year. I think I missed it once. I was really ill once, and someone filled in for me. And I was really sorry to miss it. Stella in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, thank you very much for calling. And what's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. I would very much like to ditto the Peshtigo fire.
Yes.
There's a wonderful book on it that I don't have right to hand, and I don't remember the title and author, but I'll get them to you. And my second suggestion is, is there any possibility of having the weather guys on for your full program instead of just half of it? Because you always have more callers than you can get to, and there's high interest in it.
You know, we've actually talked about that, and some of it depends on scheduling. There's because of teaching schedules and whatnot, it's it's hard to get it's hard to get them for 90 minutes. But I certainly want to give it a try. And see if we can come up with
maybe do a tag team with other people in the department.
Yeah, that might be a way to do it. They're, John and Steve are so darn good. It's it's always a problem.
Yeah, they're fun.
Yeah, they really really are. Thanks, Stella. We'll give that a shot.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. And let's see. Oh, by the way, Friday of this week, have you gotten your Christmas shopping, your holiday shopping done yet? Tell you what, Astrid Neuenhaus is going to be joining Judith and talking about gardens, garden gifts. There's a garden gift list. Astrid comes up with a great one every year, and they'll be talking. And she's a lot of fun. I mean, the woman is... there's no Grinch in her at all. I'm telling you that for sure. She's upbeat and friendly and really loves to do it. Very enthusiastic. So we'll be talking pretty quickly, I believe, with Michael Schumacher about his book, Mighty Fitz, The Sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald. But in the meantime, it's great to be hearing these suggestions for programming on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at programs that you would like to hear on this 11 to 12:30 time slot. Steve Ackerman will be coming up in about 30 minutes or so, probably a little less than that, to talk about weather. In the meantime, we'll be visiting with Michael Schumacher. He's on his way to the studios and will be there soon. In the meantime, we're taking great program suggestions. Janet in Racine up next. Janet, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Yeah, I was wondering about how Wisconsin was settled, what nationalities came in and what time periods. My grandmother was born in Milwaukee and of German ancestry. I've just moved up to Racine, and I see a lot of Italian names and stuff. And I was just curious about it, as well as what Indian tribes were in which areas.
All right. Thank you very much. And we have some people here on our UW-Madison campus, but elsewhere as well, who can certainly address that. Thanks, Janet.
Uh-huh.
We got some pretty unique ethnic groups, I think, and it's always fun to hear about them. Barbara and Holman, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. First of all, I really appreciate your show.
Thank you.
And second of all, I used to teach poetry as part of an English program, you know, and there's a great poem about the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald. My students really loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And my suggestion is a program on the stillborn baby.
Okay. Barb, I thank you very much for that. I hope you will tune in Wednesday. It's not nearly the same. It's but somewhat related. We'll be talking. Judith will be talking at 11 o'clock about premature births.
Okay.
And stillborn babies is something that I don't think we've talked about. I have some personal experience with it, family experience.
Me too.
yeah, so it's actually hard for me sometimes to talk about that, but it's the emotional toll on families is great.
Yes, there's a movie coming out. Hopefully, it's going to make it, you know, into the theaters and stuff. The first of the year, called Return to Zero.
Return to Zero. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Barb.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it very much. Return to Zero. Well, maybe we can do a show connecting at about the time that movie comes out. Jim in Madison, your turn. Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling.
The reason I called was that if one listens to BBC radio, which has, as you know, 8 or 9 channels, the emphasis now in Europe is particularly the fact that we're facing the 100-year anniversary of the First World War being started. And if any event affected history both in Europe and the United States and the world, it was that, because it then in turn caused the set the stage for the Second World War. And a lot of what we're facing now, like the creation of Iraq and Afghanistan, obviously, July 1914 was the time when that began, but Wisconsin folks should be affected directly because the German population in Milwaukee was at times discriminated against because of the reactions against Germany during that time.
Yeah.
That would be a great show.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jim. And World War One is a show, is a topic I've covered World War II, Vietnam a lot, even Korean War, but not World War One. And I not long ago read a book, an account of World War One, and it was, frankly, pretty eye-opening for me. And I was taken by it. And we have some historians here in the state who I'm sure could talk about it, and appreciate the suggestion. Thank you. Appreciate it. And let's see, Benita in Muscadet. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My suggestion would be our local author, Dan Bumpkamp from Muscadet.
Mm-hmm.
He has written 12 books.
Wow.
They are great. The first one started out as Thunderfoot, which is, he has had several foreign exchange students, and he's taken excerpts and of hunting, fishing. They have a lot to do with the local area. There's one that's called The Spirit of Castle Rock Cougar. There's one on the Bogus Bluff. And he just came out recently with a book on the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Hmm. Would you?
And they are super books.
Dan Bocamp, Bomkamp.
Bomkamp.
Bomkamp?
Yes. And he has a website, www.danbomkamp.com.
All right. You know what? We like to feature Wisconsin authors. So I'll tell you what, we will look into that, Benita, and see what we can come up with. And the Edmund Fitzgerald, his latest book. Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. And appreciate also the fact that Michael Schumacher has, you know, it's kind of not funny, but interesting in a way, because here we are talking about, we're going to be talking about the great storm, the deadly Great Lakes hurricane of 1913. That's part of the title of Michael Schumacher's book is November's Fury, the Great Lakes hurricane of 1913. We don't have a hurricane, but we've got the first great snowfall of the year. And that has, I know, it doubled my time getting to work this morning, and it probably doubled his time getting to the studio to talk with us. But he's made it to our Milwaukee studios. We're great to have him here to talk about his book, and certainly hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Thanks to everybody, by the way, who called in with their suggestions and comments. And Michael, welcome.
Thanks. Good to be here, I think. It's been, it was a drive up here, believe me.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. The storm you wrote about took place November 7th through the 10th, 2013. No, not 2013.
I make that mistake all the time, incidentally.
It was not 2013. It was 1913. And 100 years and just a few days ago, maybe you'd give us a little background on what kind of ship traffic there was on the Great Lakes back in those days.
Well, they had pretty good traffic back in those days, but in this particular storm, a lot of boats stayed in. People remember the ones that went out or the ones that sunk or the ones that were grounded and so forth, but I think it's very, very important to remember for the sake of perspective here. Most of the boats stayed in. They had predicted a storm. They didn't predict anything of this nature, but they predicted rough sailing, and a lot of captains just would keep their boats in. But there was a substantial amount on the lakes and both ends of the storm. And that, by that, I mean the storm was really divided into two parts. The upper lakes, Lake Superior in Michigan, and then the last couple days on the lower lakes, particularly Huron, which took it the worst.
And that's, and when we're talking bad, I mean, give us, give our listeners a sense of, I mean, there were over 200 lives lost, 250.
Right. They never know exactly because they didn't keep real good records of the crew lists and so forth, but they know it was over 250. And it was a storm that was, in actual meteorological terms, a hurricane. The sustained winds were very, very high. Some of them, I believe, it was over 50 miles an hour for 14 straight hours, something like that, on the lakes. And what that means for the listener's sake is when you have sustained winds, you have a buildup of waves. Wind creates waves. And so what you had, especially at the lower ends of both Lake Michigan and Lake Huron, enormous waves. And the boats that got trapped on the lower end of Huron, it was just it was a nightmare. 8 boats went down in about a 6-hour period. The big ones, too. I'm not talking about these little tiny fishing tugs or something. These are the big ore carriers, 8 of them. Yeah. And they know this because that's when the sailors' watches stopped, when they recovered them, they saw.
I tell you, I looked at my, I mentioned this earlier on the show, but I looked at my house this morning. It's a 3-story house. It's about 38 feet high, tall, and with the roof on it, 38, I would say. Mm-hmm. And there were waves that were bigger than my house.
Yes. They were holding at about 30, but one of the captains said he had a 70-foot rogue wave they were hit with.
Oh.
70 feet is a pretty good-sized wave. And on the oceans, they tend to undulate more. On the Great Lakes, they come at you in what they call chop. They're pointed. They're Christmas trees. They, in fact, jokingly refer to them as the Christmas trees. And they come at you one after another with very, very little time to recover. So when these boats would get hit with one, they barely get back, even keel, and they get hit again. Or worse yet, you get 2 of them under your boat at the same time. And that's when it becomes very, very lethal because you can have a thing they call hogging. You know, it'll either lag down or it'll buckle. And we know of at least 2 boats that went down when they found the remains of the boats. They were both cracked across the deck.
Yeah.
So, you know, it would just crack these boats like an egg, as one of the guys said.
Like an egg. And, you know, there are so many interesting stories. You know, I think one of the reasons there was so much loss of life because of where it fell in the shipping calendar. Maybe you could set the stage for us on that.
November's always been the worst month. You were talking to someone earlier about the Edmund Fitzgerald, which I, for my own commercial, I also wrote a book about the Edmund Fitzgerald, but I wrote one about the Carl Bradley also.
Yes.
And I'm working on one now on the Daniel J. Morrell. All of these boats, all of these storms took place in November. It's a very, very treacherous month on the Great Lakes. And you get what they call heavy weather captains. They're captains who have sailed in all sorts of conditions. They know the strength of their boats, or they think they do anyway. And they're willing to go out in some pretty rough water. But when you look at the Armistice Day storm, that's another November one. The Matafa storm in 1905 that took place on Lake Superior was also in November. It's just a miserable month to be sailing. And conversely, it's the last month of the shipping year, the shipping calendar, as a general rule. And so everyone's trying to get those last couple of shipments in. This is where you can make some money. So they will tend to at least go out in rough weather. They won't. A captain won't go out if he thinks his boat is in danger or his crew would be in danger. But if they think, well, this is going to be a gagger, as they like to call them, we'll risk it. We'll go out in this. This isn't that bad. My ship is in good shape.
Milton Smith, who was the engineer on the Charles Price, or was going to be again, you have a little story about him right away in the book, and then very late in the book as well. He had a premonition.
Yes. You know, it's funny because sailors really do have those from time to time. It's not uncommon. It's not something every sailor has, but every once in a while you just have a bad feeling about something, and so you get off. Another gentleman, which made for a very funny story in this book, had a sort of a premonition. He was on the Carruthers, I believe, which was a brand-new boat that went down, you know, on its fourth, you know, a trip.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the captain of that boat joked about, you know, he said the paint hasn't dried. The guys are complaining that the paint's still tacky. This was a new boat, and it was one of the strongest ones on the lakes. It was built for safety. Well, this guy just, he jumps off that boat, and he gets on another one. And, well, when bodies started washing on shore and wreckage and such, they because you don't have today, or then you didn't have television and such, but they posted in a paper, we found a bunch of victims, here's kind of what they looked like. Well, this guy's sister sees this and goes, oh, my God, it's John Thompson. She calls her father, and she says, they found John. He's one of the victims. So the father travels all the way to Goderich, Ontario, to claim his son's body. He goes in, and there is his son laid out. He could tell it's his son because he's got the JT, John Thompson, tattoo on his arm where it belongs. He's missing three teeth like he's supposed to be missing. He's got bruises or scars, I should say, on one arm and a leg, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
All of it matched up. He claimed his son's body and took him home. They've got him laid out in the living room, you know, for a funeral gathering. And there's a knock on the front door, and, he goes to open the door. And there's this guy standing there, and he passes out. Well, his wife sees him pass out. She goes there. She sees this guy standing there, and she passes out because the guy was John Thompson.
Yeah.
And they asked him, you know, what were you doing? Why didn't you tell us? She said, I thought I'd surprise you. Well, he surprised them all right. But the thing that's interesting to me about it is, first of all, the incredible coincidence that this other person would have the same markings. I mean, what are the odds if you stop? And they never did find out who that sailor was. He's buried at that wonderful gravesite in Goderich for the unclaimed sailors. There were four or five of them.
You know, Michael Schumacher, our guest, by the way, he is the author of a fascinating book. It's called November's Fury, The Deadly Great Lakes Hurricane of 1913. Great to have him along. And there were so many fascinating stories in the book that you relate about people who made it and people who didn't make it and why. I think one interesting, and I think this goes back, I'm trying to remember now, Milton Smith, going back to that, he actually was asked to go back and identify bodies, and one of the bodies he knew from his ship, but the guy had on a life jacket from a different ship.
Another one of those mysteries. This storm created a number of mysteries, and to this day, there's only speculation as to what might have happened. It's clear that the Price ran across the Regina. Now, whether or not the Price was sinking and the Regina came to them, the Regina was sinking and the Price came to them, or they ran across each other in lifeboats, no one will ever know. Because the problem with this particular storm, and it was obviously a major problem, was of all the ships that sank, there were no survivors. It was always lost with all hands. So when you go to identify the body and you see a guy who was one of your close friends on board the boat wearing another boat's life jacket, you go, well, this is a little bit strange. I mean, what is it? And he swore, there's no question that this was his buddy. And so it's one of those mysteries of which there were many. The Price itself was a mystery, as you know, for a while, because when they found it, it was upside down in the water, just with a portion of its bow sticking out. Nobody knew what it was. And, of course, with so many boats missing, everybody wanted to know for sure, because there were families and loved ones of people on board that would want to know. And so there was literally a reward offered for whoever would go under the, under the water and identify the boat. And again, you have to keep in mind, this was way before aqualungs and all this stuff, and so it was very, very tough diving. They couldn't dive for the first few days, and when they finally did, they got someone who went down there and identified it as the Price.
Yeah, that's an amazing story. I mean, there was actually some politics involved in that. Nobody really wanted to go down.
Right. Well, it there was with the Fitzgerald, for what it's worth, with trying between the American and Canadian governments to get that a boat declared a grave site to keep people from, jumping on board and stealing artifacts and stuff like that. And nobody wants to get involved in it because it's messy.
Yeah.
After this particular storm, there were a lot of boats down. It was messy to try to, who's responsible? How are we going to work this out? When I've talked to some of the people that conducted these hearings, including the ones on the Fitzgerald, for the Coast Guard, and they talk about you walk into a room to conduct this hearing, and there are all of these lawyers sitting around, and it is just it's not something that anybody wants to do. So in defense of the politicians, not that they need any defending, but you know what I'm saying. They just didn't want to deal with it.
Yeah. Now, it was not just industrial vessels that were caught up in the storm. There were some pleasure crafts involved in it.
Right. Right.
Why he would be out there, I don't know.
Well, they brought the Price down. That was the big joke, If you want to go visit, I can't imagine wanting to get on a cruise ship and go to Duluth, say, in November. but somebody did because the Price was right. And these boats were generally only partially full. They weren't, packed with people because most people are sane, I guess. Fortunately, nobody on the lakes and those boats made it through, every single one. I think if memory serves, there were three out there. And I talk about one in particular.
Yeah.
But they all managed to make it out. There is a very funny photograph. And by funny, I mean you have to have a strange sense of humor, and I do. But when you see one of these things washed up on a shore, it's sitting there with trees around it and that, you're going, well, that's a little irregular, and so it would make me laugh, And there's a very funny one of those cruise ships up on the rocks, and the people standing down at the they're getting them off and everything, and the people are standing down at the base of the boat, and it's like they never in their dreams figured on something like this.
Nope, that's something you wouldn't forget. That is really for sure, and thinking about that. You tell a fascinating story about an 18-year-old kid, Edward Canaby, I believe his name was, who was steering
right
the what was the name of the ship? The Hog.
The Hoggood.
The Hoggood.
Was the Hoggood. And it was a funny thing because he was a kid. He was, obviously, he was 18 years old. He was the third wheelsman. It was just his bad luck to be up there when all this was going on at its worst. And it was the same thing down at the bottom of the lake, and they were looking at some mountainous waves. And now, you know, there was some disagreement as to how much, whether or not he was disobeying captain's orders. And the captain, of course, had a little bit different tale to tell. But according to the story, anyway, that was circulated for all these years, he was up at the wheel. The captain was going to turn the boat around and head back up the lake, up Huron. And his poor Canterbury kid thought, not on my watch or not. You know, because to make the turn, it's a very, very difficult maneuver, for one thing. You are putting your ship broadside to these massive waves we were talking about before. And these things are hitting. It's hard for the average Joe, really, and I include myself amongst them, to understand what kind of force these things have. We're used to, you know, go to the beach and you get hit by a little wave or something. Ah, this is good. These things could exact millions of pounds of pressure onto whatever's in front of them. I quote in the book when Sebastian Junger wrote Perfect Storm, he was trying to explain the sheer force of these things. And he said if you get a wave that's 10 foot high and 50 feet long and traveling at 34 miles an hour or whatever it was, you're going to get like 2 million pounds of force coming at you. Now, these were bigger than 10 feet. They were longer than 50 feet, you know, and they were traveling at least at that speed. So these guys were getting hit unbelievably. So when Canterbury is sitting there in a wheelhouse and his captain is talking about making a turn, he's like, I don't think so. He made his turn all right, but he made it towards shore, and they just got blown right up onto the beach.
Yeah.
And so he really saved his vessel and the crew.
Saved their lives, yeah.
Very likely, because those waves were just – what we found out was with the boats that sank in Lower Huron, the ones that have been found – all of them but one were found upside down.
Ugh.
Those waves just bowled them over, and they weren't able to recover. And it's very, very possible that that's what could have happened here if Canterbury had turned against the waves that way, the way the captain wanted. But there was another captain on the Sheetal who did it several times. I think it was four turns all told. And he kept that boat out in the lake, and he saved the boat. So who knows?
Who knows? Boy, what a fascinating story, Michael. The individual stories that you tell in the book are really interesting to me. It keeps you kind of on the edge of your seat through the.
I appreciate that. That's what you hope anyway.
Oh yeah.
I wish I could say I made them up. I mean, my job was just don't screw this up. You know, there's so many good stories.
Yeah, there are. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure, and thanks for having me on.
Michael Schumacher, and John in Richland Center has a story to tell. We're going to keep him on because we're going to be talking weather coming up here, but I just want to mention that Michael Schumacher's book is called, or titled, November's Fury, The Deadly Great Lakes Hurricanes of 1913. He's got lots of photos in the book as well as some really fascinating stories, I can tell you that. And some a little bit. I'm looking at some here. There's one photo of bodies up on the shore, and obviously a sad photo there. But there were also some, as he's talking about, there were also some funny instances as well, along with the sad. So we got sad, we got happy, and we got adventure galore. And one of the adventurous guys that I know is Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies. And adventurous Steve will be with us next to talk weather on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.